Hey, it's Alicia here. Just a quick message before we start the pod. I wrote a book and it's out. It's called The Purpose of Power: How We Come Together When We Fall Apart. I literally cannot wait for you to pick it up so we can discuss. This book is a culmination of my nearly 20 years of organizing. Plus, it's about how we build movements for the 21st century and how we become the fighters that we need to win. This is not a Black Lives Matter book, but it includes my experience with Black Lives Matter, as well as other campaigns and other movements. I want to give a shout out to so many of you who have already grabbed the book and are posting all over the socials. Thank you, thank you, thank you. All of your sweet and lovely messages are giving me life. You can find this book at all the retailers, but if you're in Oakland, go ahead and get your copy at the oldest Black bookstore in the country, Marcus Books. And say hi to Miss Blanche for me. Now, on with the show.
The following is a quarantine recording presented to you in Around Sound.
It was recorded with whatever was lying around.
Lady don't take no shit. Insist on respect the sister. Walk around like a womanish. She won't speak less of something worse. Singing don't play. The girl take herself so serious. People stare curious. She got a natural way. Her hips sway furious. Yet luxurious. Carries herself like the cutest, most prettiest thing you see this side of the bay.
Hey, this is Lady Don't Take No, your weekly roundup of all of the real and none of the fake. I'm your host, Alicia Garza. This show is pro-Black, pro-queer, proudly feminist, and pro-do what you like. Every week, you're going to get the best of what goes on in my head and what we loving on and what we hating on, what we might be and what we ain't going to do. Politics, pop culture, how we're pushing this boulder up a mountain to get the basic things most Americans need to live well, we cover it all. We are recording from Oakland, California, the center of the known universe, where we are dealing with Rona and Reconstruction. It's a challenging time, a changing time. It's a time of transformation. It's all the things all the time nowadays, but we're going to help you understand the dynamics of this time every single week. So be sure to tune in, tell a friend, and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. We do it for the culture, so the pod is free 99, because we know that with a country in chaos, the least we could do is keep you from putting your money anywhere else than where it's needed.
She got her razor sharp wit and she just won't quit. Uh-huh. Flaunting it, body built like a house made out of brick. She got the smile, style, and finesse, compounded with a blessed profound intellect.
Our guest this week is an advocate, a policymaker, an activist, and a survivor. On November 3rd, 2020, she was re-elected to a second term in the U.S. House of Representatives, representing the Massachusetts 7th Congressional District. When she was first elected in 2018, she became the first woman of color to represent the Commonwealth of Massachusetts in Congress. Now listen, y'all, she's a member of the squad, and we are so happy to have her on the pod today. Welcome, 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 Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley.
Well, it's so good to be with you.
So good to be with you.
And I know that, you know, I can just, if we're here to be, you know, pro-Black, pro-feminist, pro-queer, I just want to, you know, just bring our ancestors, let's bring Audre Lorde and James Baldwin, you know, into this room and into this space and whoever else. But,
yes.
You know,
yes.
We're walking with you. We're walking
yes,
with
please.
You.
Yes, please. And the ancestors are pleased that you are on this show today. I know that much for show. So look, despite some people's telling of it, we are still in a pandemic. And so I got to ask you, what has your quarantine life been like? And what does quarantine even look like as a congressperson? Have you developed any unique habits live and direct from Miss Rona?
Okay, so I want to say that first, I think the challenge for, you know, all of us doing the work of liberation, when what is being piled on is an unprecedented pandemic in the midst of that work, the other work doesn't stop. So although this has been all consuming as well it should be, and it's only exacerbated a lot of the hurt that we seek to mitigate through movement building work, through policy, there's just so much need. There's just so much hurt. And I, early on, I think I was coping better because it seemed that it might be a shorter period. Mm-hmm. And so I think that I was doing all the right things in terms of my meditation and my prayer and my wellness anchoring and making sure that I was staying hydrated and certainly appreciating that even in the midst of this tsunami of hurt, that I was with my family, which is something that is rare, certainly for consecutive periods of time. That's right. And feeling, inordinately blessed that we had enough space that we could, have space for remote schooling, for my husband's work and also for my work. But then somewhere in the middle, a lot of those coping mechanisms and strategies just began to fail me because the weight was just so heavy. Mm-hmm. And, we've experienced our own traumas as people doing the work of liberation. And so trying to keep you whole, you well, you together, because, we're standing in the gap and they're depending on us. And, I just had to sort of reconcile within myself early on, you are always going to fall short in this moment because this is unprecedented in every single way.
That's right.
And so just needing to develop a new definition of success for each day, if that makes sense.
Oh, it makes complete sense. I was sitting here and I was realizing that iGen and I had the pleasure and the honor of connecting with you on our podcast, Sunstorm, right when this pandemic hit. That was back in like March or April. And so much has happened since then. So can we just talk real quick about what the last 8 months have been like for you? And where has your skin gotten tougher? And where has your heart gotten softer?
This is why you're good at what you do, because that is an excellent question. I think what it has given me is a greater appreciation for the movement builders that came before us and the sustainability of their movement and of their resolve and their spirits in the face of everything. And so I find myself a lot returning to history and reading a lot of poetry or any sort of solve or that which would further embolden me in the work, because as heavy as the pandemic is, as heavy as the economic hardship it has wrought is, as heavy as the weight of oppression and marginalization and racism is, I can't stop. So I think the ancestors have thickened my skin. Mm. And then where's my heart softened? This will sound odd. In some ways with myself, because I've had to find ways to extend the same grace to myself in doing the work that I seek to extend to everyone around me, in this human family and who does this work. And so just really trying to pay attention to me. And so extend some grace to myself and some accountability. Right now I have, water next to me because
there you go.
I'm not someone who drinks water. Like I was actually known for that. And then early in the pandemic, I just became very intentional and very good about it. And then, like I said, in the middle, everything collapsed. Mm-hmm. And as someone who's been doing the work of combating trauma and mitigating trauma for a long time, one of the first things that you learn if you go to be with someone in community who's just been robbed of a loved one due to gun violence is to give them water. I never really understood. Like I got it intellectually, the power of water, the spiritual role it plays, how restorative it is, even just how necessary it is. But I didn't really get it intimately, fundamentally, right? And so even if all I'm doing is making sure that I'm getting my water, that's one way which my heart is softened, which is like you have to extend grace to yourself and not for the utility of fueling me to continue the work. But just because, my peace, my wholeness, my wellness, my joy is important enough all on its own, notwithstanding my wanting to be, you know, more courageous, more committed, more emboldened in the work.
I love that. I love that. And I swear it is like no secret to anybody. And hopefully it's not a secret to you, Congresswoman, that you are one of my all-time favorite people. And not just like my all-time favorite elected people, but like one of my all-time favorite people.
Thank you. That's crazy coming from you, but thank you.
One of the things I love about you is how like homegirl and hand grenade you are. You know what I mean? Like, this is like
T-shirt. T-shirt.
So I'm just saying, I mean, this is like my public plea to be like your real friend in real life, because
yeah.
I bet you even have friends that you went to grade school with that you're still friends with. Am I right?
You know what? I do.
See? But,
I do. But you know what though? I am such an only child. And I think in some ways I'm one of those like extrovert introvert types. You know, I mean, I find myself like going to a house party and like hiding in the bathroom.
I do the same thing.
You know, and I'm texting, you know, one of those girlfriends I've had all my life that is like, are you texting me from the bathroom? If you don't go out there and talk to people, I don't know what goes on. I think honestly, it's that I don't know how to be surface. And so I find social settings very
anxiety producing
because not to be callous, but you know, a lot of that perfunctory sort of, you know, and how's your family and how the kids, like, I mean, you don't know my kid's name, like you don't really care. So I'm really struggling, you know, I mean, I'm not even mad that that's the case. I'm just saying like, I want to go deep right away. You know, I'm like very revealing and you know, that sort of thing. And so I just want to go deep. And I want everything to be a build, and I want it to feel meaningful and transformative. And, you know, that is very challenging.
Same. I'd like people to know about your journey to becoming the badass Congresswoman that you are. Like, how did you get to where you are, and who helped you along the way?
You know. My mom, you know, may she rest in peace and power, the ancestors, Barbara Jordan, Shirley Chisholm, Nikki Giovanni, Sonia Sanchez. You know, when I just think about all those for whom I felt I was poured into intimately and with intention, and those that I feel mentored by their example, you know, Barbara Lee, you know, Congresswoman Barbara Lee. And as I've told the story many times before, you know, my mother was a tenants' rights activist. She was a community organizer. I mean, she held many, many jobs, but these are the two that are probably the most like defining for me. And so certainly as an only child, I took to movement building work because of the chosen family you create and you find along the way. I took to the work of liberation because that was my mother's expectation. You know, she told me early on, like, to be Black is a beautiful thing, and I expect you to be proud of it, but just know that you're being born into a struggle, and I expect that you will do your part in the struggle. She never patronized me or condescended me as a child. She was one of these parents who really believed that you're just a little person, you know, and so she never spoke baby talk. She didn't read me traditional bedtime stories. She read me speeches. She read me the speeches of Barbara Jordan and Shirley Chisholm. My very first coloring book was learning the colors of the Black Liberation Flag.
Yes.
And it was a coloring book created by the Chicago Defender, you know, our Black newspaper. And I remember some of my first words being, it's nation time. So this is the kind of household that I grew up in. And then my father, and I do want to say this because I think I don't give him enough credit, because we have a criminal legal system which criminalizes substance use disorder. My father was in and out of the criminal legal system because of a substance use disorder. And while he was incarcerated, he attained 2 advanced degrees, later went on to become a college professor and a published author. You know, I went through a period there where I felt very resentful and very abandoned by my father. And he wrote me faithfully. So I always knew I was loved by him, but I wasn't responsive because I didn't understand the disease and I felt abandoned. But my father sent me the books of the Harlem Renaissance. And I read every single one. And so I do just want to acknowledge that even from behind the wall, he was still parenting. He was still pouring into me, directly shaping my Black consciousness. And so that's my foundation. And then like many Black folks, I had this duality. So I lived in, you know, a challenging neighborhood and there were a lot of pressures there. But my mother sent me to this very elite private school. And that meant that we came home to eviction notices regularly. But because she was a single parent, this was a sacrifice she wanted to make because she knew when I was at school, I was safe. So she thought, right? But I was vulnerable in other ways that she didn't immediately see or understand. So like really quickly, and I promise I'll get to more of my bio, but this is important. So when I was 13, my mother threw me a pool party at the local Y. And I remember immediately freaking out when I walked into the surprise pool party because my friends from school, from church, and from the block were all there.
Oh, wow.
And immediately in my mind, I was trying to like, how am I going to manage this? And so I did what any 12 going a 13-year-old would do. I ran to the locker room and I hid. And I had a lot going on. It was like body image. I looked, you know, I was in the minority in every way in my school, you know, so anyway, my mother followed me into the locker room and she's like, listen, I paid a lot of money for this party. And she called me by my whole name.
Okay.
And you will not be ungrateful and you need to get out there. And I said, you know, mommy, I can't go out there because if I get in the pool and my hair gets wet, this is what I said at 12, it will betray me. And they will know the truth about me. And she said, and what is that? And I said, well, that I'm Black. And I was a child who tested gifted. So like, imagine this like disconnect. My mother touched my forearm. I still remember it. And she said, baby, they know. And, you know, and then I went back out there. But anyway, so she didn't realize like really the deep like trade-offs of that. So then I came to Boston to attend college, Boston University. And I was president of my college and doing all those different things. And then I landed an internship, an unpaid internship, which I worked 3 paid jobs through that unpaid internship. And again, in a full circle moment, I am now the congresswoman for that seat. So the office that I was an unpaid internship working 3 paid jobs to do 25 plus years ago, that was with Congressman Joseph P. Kennedy II. Then I went on to work for Senator John Kerry for 11 years. And then while working for him, people came to me and said, this is the year the first Black woman gets elected to the Boston City Council. We believe that will be you and you must run. And I said no. And then eventually did say yes. But, you know, look, you don't get to choose who your parents are. But if I could have, I would have chosen Martin Terrell and Sandy Eccles. They changed my life. And then certainly that internship changed the trajectory of my life.
Now tell me your internships are paid now.
Of course. Yeah. And okay. In fact, I mean, I'm telling you this, not it's not a badge of honor, but it's a barrier to public service, to getting this political tutelage. It's a barrier, I think, to successful succession planning if you do value representation. And so, yeah. Now, certainly our interns are paid a living wage, and I know that there are many other offices that do the same.
I love your story so much, especially this piece about having to blend so many worlds. And, you know, I have a lot of resonance with that myself. I mean, I talk about all about that stuff in my book. I'm like, we ain't all the same, child. We all come from a range of different experiences, but there is a series of experiences that also connect us. And I think that piece about having to navigate many different worlds where we don't belong in a range of ways, or we're trying to figure out how to belong, or we're trying to figure out different ways of belonging, is very much an experience that we share as Black folk. And as you were talking about your story, you know, I have heard very similar things too, even from Congresswoman Lee, who I love so much. She is like, you know, people always say like Barbara Lee speaks for me. And I'm like, no, 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 she really does.
Absolutely. I mean, that's not,
like,
you know,
not just a slogan. This is like a real thing. And it was deep to me to hear you reference her as somebody who helped you get to where you are. I had an experience. I was going to do some TV something, and I was at the little studio over there in Oakland. And right before I went on, it was you and Congresswoman Lee. And literally, like, I had to pause. I had to do some makeup because tears welled up in my eyes. And there was all this makeup trying to run everywhere. And there's just something that fills my spirit with, like, a complete and utter joy when I see y'all together. And it's not just because you're two badass congresswomen, but because of every step that I'm aware of your journey to sit in those seats. And when I see you two sitting together, it's like my DNA starts rattling in the happiest way.
I definitely feel that way with her. I mean, we knew each other when I was a city councilor. I mean, of course, who doesn't know Barbara Lee? I mean, you know.
She's the best.
The epitome of courage.
She is the best. Yeah. So look, I had to ask you because you know there's a Senate seat that just opened up. And our sister Kamala has made history, represent Oakland. Our sister Kamala has made history and is now the only Black woman, Indian woman to ever be vice president of this country. There's a seat that's opened up now.
Yeah.
I got to say, just for the record, I ride with Barbara Lee until the wheels fall off, child. So I'm supporting her bid for that congressional seat. But let me ask you this. Where are you at with that, if you can share with us? Because I know, you know, things are political. But also, can you just talk to our folks about what is the impact of the fact that our sister Kamala, Senator, former Senator and Vice President-elect Harris, is the only Black woman sitting in that body the United States
Senate. And there's
only
been two in history. And the other was from Illinois, which is Carol Mulsey Braun.
Represent.
You know, growing up in Chicago, look, I had a woman mayor in Jane Byrne. Mm-hmm. I had a Black mayor in Harold Washington. That was actually the first campaign I worked on.
I love that.
And then, you know, eventually did have Carol Mulsey Braun as a United States Senator. So, you know, coming to Massachusetts, to Boston, and seeing the lack of leadership parity when it comes to gender and race was just really stunning, especially for a place that is so defined as being, you know, uber progressive, but often more progressive in its touting than in its actual bona fides and actual practice. But yeah, there's only been two Black women, and right now there's only one. And Barbara Lee and Karen Bass have handled this with tremendous grace. And they both feel very strongly, and I share the sentiment that the seat must continue to be held by a Black woman. And certainly, you know, look, Barbara Lee is the most senior Black woman in the House, you know, has paid her dues, deserves all the flowers, you know, and I love that for people who did not know Karen Bass that, you know, in this last, given her vetting and consideration for VP, that more people are aware of her. I mean, you all are just very lucky in California to have this deep bench of folks that will also bring not just representation, but righteousness.
That's right. That's right.
What is the impact of that? Again, it's not representation for symbolism's sake, although we should never give short shrift to the power of symbolism. To me, it's about the impact in policies and what is brought to the floor for debate and how that platform is wielded. When Black women are at the table, we shake the table. We call the question. And we bring the confluence of our lived and professional experiences to every debate, to every policy. You know, shout out to Dr. Kimberly Crenshaw. I think that, you know, we manifest intersectionality in every way. And so the seat must be continue to be held by a Black woman.
Come on, I agree 115,000%. I want our listeners to understand what we're moving into. we're moving into unknown territory. And for a lot of us, we're breathing a sigh of relief. We're breathing the first sigh of relief that many of us have been able to breathe for about 4 years now, child. But a lot of us also know it ain't over. And the Senate races in Georgia are at the forefront of everybody's minds. And also, we're facing a transition process that I think is going to be defining for a generation. Now, lots of people that I know are unsatisfied with what they see now. And I always say, look, this isn't the Obama years, right? This is like literally digging ourselves out of a pit that we had to sit in with all the funk and the mud and the gunk and all the stuff, right? So this is not the same moment as 2008. But let me ask you, because you are on the inside trying to figure out not just how to repair what's been broken, right? But to also see if we can make advances. What advice do you have for those of us who are watching what's happening and perhaps getting a little bit disillusioned about the potential for real change?
Yeah, again, it's about the sustainability of the movement. I mean, the power of the people has always been greater than the people in power. Mm-hmm. That's always been true. It always will be true. That's not to give short shrift to the power of the Oval Office, of Senate seats, or even my own seat. It's just the acknowledgement, again, that very few leaders lead. Most are pushed. And so pressure is a good thing. And tension is a good thing. And we are going to have to be comfortable with tension if we want to really have a breaking through, both from a healing and restorative standpoint, but also from a reset, recovery, and reconstruction standpoint. Mm. Here's what I'm looking for. If history is written by the winners, then the acknowledgement that the most marginalized delivered this democratic victory. Mm. Black, brown, indigenous, AAPI, disabled, young people, LGBTQ, the most marginalized delivered this victory. This movement met the moment. Mm. And they did it, we did it, with the urgency and at the scale that the moment demanded. And so now we have to advance policies that meet the needs of those in the movement with the same boldness and the same urgency with which the movement met the moment. And I promise you, I'm not trying to make that a tongue twister. But this is just the verbiage that feels the most authentic to me. And so I have to stick with it, even if it does not land elegantly. But and the other thing is that to affirm housing and healthcare as a human right, you know, to fight for workers' rights and protections, to say that if you're sick, you should be able to stay home. If you have a loved one who is sick, you should be able to stay home and care for them. I mean, these things are radical only in that they are systemic and seek to get to the root of the problem. But this idea that these are third rail, leftist, unpopular ideas just doesn't ring true. Mm-hmm. And this movement of the most marginalized, most are issue-based activists who have been organizing around racial justice and climate justice and dismantling mass incarceration and pushing for Medicare for All and a Green New Deal. Mm. And so there must be accountability and there must be reciprocity. And so what that looks like to me, after we've done everything possible to regain control of the Senate, because we have to keep the momentum going, that is really critical, because this Senate carrying the water for this corrupt, calloused, and cruel administration the last 4 years has obstructed the most basic of things we need to be doing. Never passing a relief package to meet the scale and scope of this crisis, but instead approving 230 plus federal far right leaning judges.
That's right.
So we need to advance out of this Democratic majority led House bold policies that meet the needs of the movement, that support an equitable recovery, but then create the floor for the reconstruction, because we cannot return to a pre-COVID normal.
Come on.
Then we have to regain control of the Senate, so that once we've moved policies out of the House, that they are not obstructed by a Senate that has stood in the way of restoring voting rights, that has stood in the way of a George Floyd Justice and Policing Act, that has stood in the way of lowering the cost of prescription drugs, of an infrastructure bill. The order, the sequencing of this is regain control of the Senate, and then there are things I'm pushing the Biden-Harris administration on by executive order day one, including halting federal executions, eliminating the Muslim travel ban, canceling student debt, which is critical to an equitable economic recovery, and also a racial justice issue.
That's right.
And very focused on cabinet appointments and otherwise what this administration is looking like, because personnel is policy.
That's right.
And it has got to be reflective and representative of the American people, both in our makeup, but most importantly, in our ideology. There have got to be progressive voices around the table.
That's 100%. Listen, I'm motivated and inspired. So I hope everybody who's just listening to this rundown is also motivated and inspired, because, again, we came into this saying that we were doing this not for these parties, but for us, because we want to move more power into the hands of more people. And so it's not about politics as usual, but we're going to see a struggle, I think, over the next period, because frankly, there is a set of us that wants to go back to normal. And we have to keep reminding folks, right, that we weren't in normal pre-pandemic. And actually, this is our opportunity to really take it to heart what it means to build back better. It means actually transforming some things. It means actually going outside of the boundaries of what we might usually do in a situation like this if the situation we were in was normal. And we have not been in any kind of normal for at least the last 4 years. But if we were to tell the whole entire truth, lots of the things that we're facing every day are more than 4 years old. So
absolutely. And so to that end, I know that I said issue-based activism around racial justice. Let me just be like very pointed, pro-Black.
Yes.
Because, okay, there's too much anti-Black rhetoric, anti-Black policies. These inequities, disparities, and racial injustices were not naturally occurring. They were legislated. And so we have to be as precise in the fixes as they were precise in the harms.
Come on. Come on.
No. So full stop. Mm. So I don't want people, look, you know, yes, racial justice, but let me be pointed. When Black folks are 3 times more likely to contract the coronavirus, 3 times more likely to die, police brutality is the 6th leading cause of death amongst Black men, want you to be precise and pointed and unapologetic. Everybody, not just Black folk.
That's right.
Everybody.
Facts.
That's what the movement and the moment demands. Let me just say this. Bipartisanship is a talking point.
Thank you.
Okay? The goal is not bipartisanship. The goal is justice.
Thank you.
And then when it comes to our own party and my caucus, unity at the expense of my liberation is not okay.
Come on.
Because we've been doing that. You know, we've been whispering and not shouting. We've been waiting and not demanding. So you can't say Black Lives Matter and thank you for your work that there is this cultural shift that exists. But now we need the power shift. Now we need the policy shift. The only receipts that matter are budgets and policies.
Come on.
That's it.
You better work. Tell it. Tell the whole thing. And just like that, it's time for our weekly roundup of all the things Lady just ain't gonna do this week. Number one. Well, folks, it looks like Team Trump plans to go out in a blaze of glory. Now that the transition has finally begun, your soon-to-be ex-president is trying to make out like a bandit and make it hard to get much done when he's gone, which, in true ex-behavior, means he ain't really gonna be gone until he moves on. And who the hell knows if that's gonna happen? Anywho, Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, we are told by The Root, has moved $455 billion
of unspent stimulus money. That's right, unspent, out of the reach of soon-to-be President Biden, making it impossible for him to spend it without congressional approval. I am serious as a heart attack, y'all. These Georgia Senate races mean a whole lot, my friends, because the Grinch is trying to steal Christmas, or really trying to steal your Rona relief. And what's fucked up about the whole thing is that they weren't trying to give it to you anyway. These people. Okay, let's move on. Number two, things Lady just ain't gonna do this week. Your ex-president, you know, the one you know might not have been good for you, but you just can't leave him alone because he represents everything you wanted, but just never could really deliver it. Well, he went on record this week with a dismaying message, chiding the movement about the words of the policy demand that would give much needed relief to our communities. Y'all, Lady be so tired. So tired. If I could just keep it 100 for a minute, let me just cut through the noise about defund the police. Look, take a position on the policy, not the language, and stop blaming your own failures to move real change on the people who actually bring change to the table. Look, y'all, these are clever and not so clever ways to move away from the responsibility to make any kind of change whatsoever. So to my next and to my ex-ex, stop running me in circles. You want to be with me or nah? What we have yet to hear is what will be done about the epidemic of police killings with no accountability. What tone will you set with your administration for state and local departments who are operating without any real oversight while you are giving them billions of dollars? How and what are you going to do to rebuild the infrastructure that our communities need to be well? How much money are you going to put on the table for that? For me, that's the only conversation I want to have from here on out. And don't bring out not one more photo montage of protest until you start moving the power and the money. May the odds be ever in your favor. All right, so here's what we want more of this week. Lady loves Tiffany Cross and Jonathan Capehart, who are two Black journalists that secured the bag and got named the new hosts of what used to be the AM Joy Show with Joy Reid. Each one will get their own show on Saturday and Sunday, respectively. And what I love about this is that both of them are bringing the news about what's happening to and with our communities. No shade, but also shade. Watching the news, always seeing a sea of white faces interpreting what's happening and talking about you without you gets old, old, old. So yes, yes, yes to the new. Congrats, friends. Next thing Lady loves this week, I'm just going to be honest and say it. Lady thinks it's excellent that this administration announced an all-woman press team, including our friend Karine Jean-Pierre as deputy press secretary. Keeping it honest, I would love to see more, really any, women of color, Black people, immigrants, people with disabilities, trans folks, with our values, making policy in this administration. And we are still quite a long ways away from that. You need to start somewhere, and let's make sure we don't end it here either. The people making policies should reflect the experiences of our communities, especially after this last 4 years when your soon-to-be ex tried to take us all the way back to 1776. Other things that Lady loves this week, television shows that include Crown, and yes, I'm gonna say it, I am. Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. So, Crown is excellent, giving us history and character development all about the monarchy and the drama of rich, repressed whites. Now, the fury over Meghan Markle makes so much more sense to me now. Besides the obvious, it just puts the whole shit in perspective. I mean, when you're one of the main colonizing-ass forces in the world, and you believed in the savagery of Africa as a continent, of course you wouldn't want a mixed-race Black woman to become the princess in line to be the queen, child.
Let's, though, have a whole ass conversation about this Real Housewives franchise, because just when you thought it was over, here come Bravo with the strangest thing I have seen in recent memory. Highlights? Rich Housewives in Salt Lake City, with the under and overtones of the beauty and whatever else of Mormon religious culture. Now listen up. There's one Black woman on the show, and she done married her grandfather after being bequeathed to him by her grandmother once she died. And homegirl, I mean, she's trying to make it work, but I swear before the Lord, I'd be like, sis, blink twice if you need help, because I cannot. And then there's a sister on there who everybody thinks is Black. I mean, she's Polynesian. I think she's Tongan, but don't nobody know what that is in her crew, so they just go with what they know, which is Black. And she's married to a Black man who's a football coach. This dude couldn't even make it to the funeral when her dad died because football called. Now look, those of us who watch reality television do it because it ain't our life, and we looking from the outside into somebody else's. And Lord knows, in this pandemic, sometimes we need an escape from our reality. So I hate to say this, but also not. Go on and get your car crash you can't bear to watch, but you also can't bear to turn away from. Cosign. I do. I cosign. Last. We are cackling. And I mean cackling. I've been cackling for the last 24 hours this week after learning that... Cackling after learning that the president's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, let out a few big juicy farts at a Michigan election hearing this week while trying to push some bullshit about election irregularities. The only thing irregular, as far as Lady can tell, is Mr. Giuliani himself, who we now know can not only not keep it in his pants, but apparently he can't keep his gas in his gut. Woo, child Jesus, what a year this has been. Oh, God, okay. I wish we had like 7 more hours, because there's all kinds of things I want to talk to you about still, but you'll just have to come back.
I have to come back? I thought I was supposed to come on here and talk about beauty products.
You know,
why did I think that was a part of this?
Because we talk about...
And let me tell you, I came with my Noxzema, old school.
Yes. Oh, I love
Vaseline,
a Noxzema.
Old school. Yes. Vaseline with cocoa butter.
Yes.
Okay, also, I know you love Fenty. I want to tell you, this Wet n Wild Photo Focus Stick Foundation is the truth. CVS. I love drugstore.
Really? I love me some Wet n Wild.
It's the truth. NYX, also an incredible brand.
NYX has a great primer.
CVS.
Like a great
and
matte
then, yes, they
primer.
Do. And Black-owned lip bar, get you some Boss Lady.
Yeah.
Angela Rye turned me on to that. It is the truth. It will stay on even after you take your mask off. It will not come off.
So happy. So those are my little tips. So happy. Oh my gosh, I loved having you. Where can people find you on the socials if they want to follow you?
It's at Ayanna Pressley, which is AyannaPressley. And that's true for Twitter and Instagram.
Oh my gosh, I love you so much. Thank you for joining us today.
I don't know if you're my sister or my cousin, but you're family. That's all I know.
I'll take them both. And that's it for Lady Don't Take No. But I'll be back here every single Friday morning to accompany you where you used to have a commute. We appreciate you joining us, and let's keep the conversation going. Tell us what's on your mind, tell us what you like, and tell us what you just ain't gonna take no more of. On Twitter, we're at Lady Take. On Insta, we're at Lady Don't Take No Pod. We're also on Facebook at Lady Don't Take No Podcast by Alicia Garza. We post ways to do something about the things you hear on this show all over our social media. So if we got you amped up today, check out the socials to find out how you can take action. Please subscribe and write us a review and let the people know what you've heard here today. Our producer is Phil Circus. Our incredible theme is by Latyrix. And this pod is supported by the Black Futures Lab.
and I'm your host, Alicia Garza. Remember, exes are exes for a reason, and I cannot wait for this current president to be the ex that stays that way. Quit talking about what you don't like and put in some work to solve it, or hush. If you're full of bullshit, it's inevitable that there will be a gas leak. And 2020 would not be 2020 if there wasn't a Grinch trying to steal the presents from under the tree. So everybody, all out for Georgia in 6 weeks and counting. That's right, I said it, because lady don't take no.
Lady don't take no, she insists on respect the sister, walk around like a woman. If she won't speak, less it's something worse saying, don't play. The girl take herself so serious, like, people stare curious, like, got a natural way, her hips sway furious, like, yeah, luxurious, like, there is a self, like,
love y'all.